Welcome back to Real Tech Talk, episode number 39. We have been listening to our audience comments. We have been observing. And everyone likes to say, E. Breeze, you must not have ever built a building. Wrong. 40 buildings in this great city, NYC. But you know what? Not about my credibility. We told you we were going to bring you technology that's impacting the field and impacting project management administration. So guess what? We brought one of the most amazing superintendents that I've seen, educated, smart, young, building some of the most incredible buildings, especially just south of Union Square, right now on to talk to you about the technologies and the problems with construction. So sit down, pay attention to what this man has to say, because he is the future.
That's why we're here, bro. This is Real Tech Talk. Boom shakalaka. So who the hell are you, bro? You know, what are you into? What do you do?
Dude, you just keep it real here. Tell me about these real estate players.
Eric Brody is the managing principal of CEMVC LLC. All opinions expressed by Eric and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of CEMVC LLC. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of CEMVC LLC may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Welcome back, people. It's Real Tech Talk, episode number 39. We've been actually listening to you out there. You know, we've been bringing in the top technologists talking about construction technology, prop tech, and the way it's changing the world. But my comments, which have been fascinating, are always talking about my credibility of building and developing in New York. Not that I built 40 buildings out there, but you know what? Instead of fighting the crowd, I brought in the real deal. The man in the field who was responsible for executing some of the most beautiful buildings in the city, my man Eugene. Eugene works at CNY, one of the largest open shop non-union outfits in the city, putting up luxury buildings everywhere. We met on a job site. I'm going to let him tell you about his background, and we're going to get into how technology is changing right in the field, here in the heart of it all, the Mecca NYC. Eugene, thank you for coming through, brother, man.
Well, first of all, Eric, I'd like to thank you for having me on the talk, and
I feel
really
like that's
appreciate
the first
it.
Time anyone has thanked me. You know, so, you're the man.
I mean,
you know?
That's what we're here for. So, like Eric mentioned, we met on site in a walkthrough for an upscale buyer, and he was walking our building, and Eric and I got to talk, and we have a very similar background where we're from.
Where and, are we from, though?
Yeah,
Eugene?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I've been in construction for 15 years. My dad's been doing it for 35. My grandparents have all been in construction. So
when you were born, you knew you were going to be building.
Yeah,
huh?
I don't think I had a choice. I mean, I went to Baruch at first, got my real estate investment degree while I was working.
Where'd you go to high school?
Midwood High School.
Midwood?
That's right.
Look at that, a Hornet too, bro.
Exactly.
This is the best, man. This is what it's all about.
And then while working at a non-union company at first.
So let's go back, though. So you go to Baruch. You go for real estate.
Correct.
And Baruch, by the way, is a college, you know? So that's where you went for your four-year degree. What'd you get?
So I went for my real estate investment degree, believe it or not, because finances are just as important. It doesn't matter whether you're a super project manager. That's super important to know the numbers, to understand the trades, to understand the opposite side.
You know, then it's so funny you say that. When we were building, right, we would always ask everyone, like, do you understand, like, your ROI? Like, you're responsible for the return. So that's really,
yes,
you know, a great point, because it's still an entrepreneurial business, and everyone has to be worried about the bottom line.
Listen, you have to review requisitions, right? You have to do all these things inside. You have to understand the owner's perspective, because if you don't understand all the players and what the numbers mean, it doesn't matter.
Yep. So then after school, but how did you get in? I know now you have the influence of your father, but what did you think?
So I worked at the same company he's been working for, largest foundation contractor in New York. They put up 43rd to Park, all these buildings. So I worked in the summers and on the weekends for them.
So he was a concrete guy?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He's an engineer / estimator. So he does the drawings, he overviews the design, does cost reports. So I started small when I was 18 years old. I was working at the company.
What
reviewing
firm was
tickets.
It?
Huh?
What firm?
Mayridge Construction.
Mayridge, yeah. Yeah, I see their trucks.
They're huge.
Yeah,
they have
yeah.
their own shops. They're all over the city.
So they're doing SOE foundation, no superstructure?
Concrete. No, they don't do superstructure. They're a big rock excavation. That's their bread and butter. That's what they do.
So getting the buildings out of the ground.
Correct.
And obviously where everything is like super tight, super difficult, super technical.
I would say it's the toughest trade, right? Yeah. Because you never know what you're going to get. I don't care what engineering drawings you get, what you never know what you're going to find underground while you're digging.
I agree with you. I think it definitely was one of the most technical trades out there. And then what was funny is they'd always be like, oh, what's the timeline for the foundation? And everyone would say the same thing, even though you had no idea.
Absolutely. So, and after that...
So you grew up around uncertainty.
Yes. You know, but I learned to like it because in this business, I'm telling you, if you like everything every day to be the same, it's you're in the wrong business,
yeah,
right? Like that is super important. Like what makes our job as builders unique is it's different problems, different solutions every day. No two projects are ever alike, right? Never. I don't. You can build two buildings side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Twin Tower is a perfect example, mm-hmm. unfortunately, but completely different problems. Right, so same thing here. You try to learn from your mistakes, but the next job you're going to have a different set of problems.
Always complexity, right?
Always.
Very hard to solve for that.
And then I went to NYU for my construction management degree, right? And while I was working at a CM already. And then I've been with CNY for over 10 years at this point.
So what's CMNY doing? And what's their bread and butter?
CNY... We do everything from medium to high-end construction. We've done things like the Woolworth Building, right? The project,
which was the top of it, right?
Yes.
That gut renovation.
Yes, 29
from Alchemy,
up,
right?
It was $200-something million. It was one of the most complex gut renovation steel projects you would ever be on.
Mm.
We've done Jamaica Crossings, which is 750,000 square feet of
new building,
retail, new building, and rental spaces. It's right by Jamaica Station. It's huge. So we've been kind of all over the city.
And what have been your roles through all of these projects?
So I've started as an assistant PM / assistant super, and then kind of grew through the ranks. And they're like, okay, here's more responsibility. Here's more responsibility. And now I'm a senior superintendent here and doing a big scale job by Union Square. So,
yeah, so tell me a little bit about that. So what does that mean to our audience, being a senior superintendent?
You're responsible essentially for tracking, scheduling, QAQC, which we're going to get into a little bit later, of all the trades.
Quality assurance, quality control.
Yep. So for all the trades, you're responsible for scheduling when they have to do, what they have to do.
So time, right? If PM side of it was the money side, the contract side, the super side is the time side. You got to coordinate, you got to get it done on that schedule.
Yes. And you have to hold everyone accountable, right? Like, hey, PM team, I need this. Hey, ownership, your design team needs to give me this by this date for this to work. And that communication, I would say, is so important. And that's where technology comes in, where now...
Well, before we get into how, you know, and obviously, I think what's fascinating is that you even know about technology, and we'll get into it because you're on the streets getting it done, building in New York City and know about tech. Give me the dollar volume so our audience knows. Like, how big are some of these projects you're working on? How many millions?
I mean, Jamaica Crossings was $300 million. Woolworth was $200. The project I'm working on right now is about $100 million.
So we're talking about big construction,
big wrecks,
big people on these jobs, big money.
Correct. This isn't a two-story building, you know, some retail space. This is ground up or gut renovations that are extremely complex, with coordination, rife with problems that you
neighbors,
can't even imagine.
People who don't want you building, Department of Buildings, DOT, LPC, everyone and their mother all
agencies
over you.
You've never heard of come by. Like, at this point, you know, I think my job sometimes becomes more about paperwork and keeping track of all the paperwork you need for these agencies than sometimes being on site, because that's
but
so
in
important.
In the field, you are, the buck stops with you. You are that responsible party for getting that built and dealing with all of those issues from the field perspective.
Correct.
So what's your team like? What do you? They give you a team. So what's the team that you put into place?
So believe it or not, for foundation, you're all alone,
mm-hmm.
right? So no matter what, you're pretty much by yourself, unless it's a gargantuan foundation. We're talking like,
but more,
you know,
about
20,
size, months. Not about like cost.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but otherwise, you're alone for foundation, and then depending on the scale of the job, they give you a certain staff of superintendent. So right now, like we said, we have a $100 million job. I have one other superintendent with me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Who answers to you.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, he's doing a great job, but it's the two of us.
No,
that's
I understand,
it.
And there needs to be leadership. It's like the military. I get it. Okay. So the point being is, there's no better person to be talking to about what are the changes you're actually seeing, because also, you're a young man. So you didn't grow up without a computer, right?
Correct.
So what do you see right now in the field from when you're talking to your peers about the resistance to the change that's occurring today?
Well, it's very interesting you say that. So when I started, I was still at that transition, because here's the thing. Construction always lags behind every other industry in technology. Always. I don't know why that is.
You said a laggard industry, by the way. I got shit on this podcast.
100%.
Oh, thank
100%.
You. 100%. Thank you,
kind sir. Every industry tech, oh, we got this new tech, right? And then Unfortunately, construction is always the last adopter.
Why?
There might be you know what it is? Construction is filled with old timers that said, oh, well, and back in my day, I did it this way, and they don't want to change.
I'm just happy you're saying it because I say it. They always would say to me, I've done it this way for 30 years, and I knew that would mean there needed to be a change, right? And you see it every day, right?
Every day. I mean, still to this degree, you know, with paper drawings and things like that, certain foremen who are in their, I would say, 50s and 60s, like, no, I need paper plans, mm-hmm. right? No matter what.
So how old are you?
I'm 35.
So 35 years old. You grew up, you had the internet, you had email, you were in the digital age.
Correct.
Right? Okay, so now, you're in the field today, you're open, right? That was my whole point of that, is not only are you credible, not only are you the guy building right now today in New York City, you're open to the change that's occurring.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you have to help integrate that change with people who are agreeable and amenable to adopting that technology and people who are not. So you don't have a choice. Sometimes you have foremen that you have to deal with on site that aren't tech savvy. And you have to deal with that and manage those expectations that, you know, sometimes because you give people tools, not everybody is able to use them.
I agree. And that's why you're a leader in the field, having to navigate that. So let's start with, what was the first technology or what you would call technology that you started to see? And then we'll talk about what you think needs to be out there and what the future holds. What was the first thing? Or what are those things that you're seeing today that, like,
so
simple, stupid, and everyone should be
correct.
Doing it?
Correct. So it's funny. When I started back in, like, 2006, 2007, everything was still paper plans and paper submittals.
In 06.
When I mean paper submittals, there's three copies. Three went to the engineer, two went to the architect, one went to us. Everything had to get manually stamped, and I did that when I started as an assistant project manager. Literally fill out the cycle number of everything, stamp it, physically deliver it to the, and then get it back physically for the other trade to work on.
So what you're stating, though, for, let's say, our audience is there's always a communication requirement, whether it's a request for information, whether it's a submittal on a material, right? It's
correct.
Like you get these documents, you get these plans, which are stating what you're supposed to be providing. What people don't realize is you have to prove that what those drawings said, you then input it into the field. So there's a constant circulation of paperwork. Insane,
absolutely.
Right? And didn't they have, when you started, a guy that just did that?
They did. You had a plan coordinator for the site and the office where, because your site office looked like a file cabinet.
Yep.
There'd be approved submittals, revision one, revision two. Just the cabinet was lined to the top with paper rolls, and it was so hard to disseminate. What's the most current one? Is this it? Is it that? And that is the biggest progression that I've seen in the last, I would say, 15 years, is to go from rolls of drawings on sites where it was just you didn't even know what role to take, to now being able to go on your computer and say, hey, this has been superseded. Hey, this is the latest, greatest drawing, right? And having it on your iPad.
So that is that. What was that project management software that changed that for you?
Originally, it wasn't even a software. Originally, it was just having internet communication that's a drive on the cloud, right? It's as simple as just
cloud,
having the cloud,
right?
Is what changed
the cloud,
that.
Cloud, you know, the first is the cloud. You're
that's
like
it.
Project management software in the cloud.
Yes, just so you could access drawings from the site on your computer.
So it was files.
Yes.
It wasn't anything that like it, tech biggest, savvy, files.
Biggest thing.
And that was difficult for people to get, right?
So difficult. Yeah. For a lot of old school supers, like, hey, where's my paper drawings? And I still need this filed, right? And I did that in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I filed them, and it was like, hey, this is the latest, and God forbid you miss something, it's on you.
So first, it wasn't a specific technology. It just was technology in general. Now we had file folders.
Correct.
Where'd it go from there?
Where it went from there was PlanGrid.
Which was what?
PlanGrid was a really cool software. So you uploaded all your drawings and onto the software, and you had all the drawings on the software so you could scan between versions, right? You had, like, for example, superseded, so you could look at the difference between the new version of the drawing and the old version of the drawing.
Can I ask you, though, did PlanGrid also, because you say new versions of drawings, you know, people didn't like doing that daily. You always had these SKs and you'd have, you know, marked up documents. Was it able to handle that?
Not initially, but later on as the version went on, you could actually incorporate a sketch into the plan, like attach it. So when you pull up that drawing, the pertinent sketch would pop up there,
so
but
the
that
first
took a while.
Software that was making sense to you in the field we're talking about, we're not talking about in the office, was a software that allowed you to just make sure that you had all your plans in order. And I don't think people understand. There could be thousands of drawings.
Thousands.
And
there
then
are
there could
thousands.
Be thousands of changes to those drawings based on field conditions and just having that. So that was PlanGrid.
Yes.
But nothing to do now with paperwork, just the drawings.
Just the drawings, right? And that helped us. Like, you could do certain markups, certain bubbles. Mm. And that helped a lot because, for example, if there was an issue, you could bubble the drawing, take a picture, attach it to it, and then send it to your project manager and say, hey, I need an RFI on this, this, and that. So it took 15 minutes instead of taking 2 days for me to take a physical picture, send it, cut the drawing out, you know. It's like,
so
now,
what did Plan Group bring us up to, 2010?
I would say even 2014.
All right, so now we're in 2014. What was the next phase you saw that was really working in the field?
So I would say new foreman, not so much for it, but it was a project management software where it allowed the architect, the construction manager, and the field staff to all be on one software.
And what was
for
that?
The submittals part. Well, we had new foreman. We had something else before that. I don't even frankly recall what we used, but...
And then it became Procore, no?
And then it became Procore, so there's still two. We use Autodesk.
Mm-hmm.
Autodesk is a very simple,
right, so Autodesk is this massive entity that does,
yes,
AutoCAD.
They bought out PlanGrid.
Okay.
So now we use Autodesk PlanGrid, which is like the latest and greatest version of PlanGrid. But I've used Procore for certain jobs as well. It depends on what ownership is paying for as well.
No,
right?
I agree. But the point is, these are cloud-based project management softwares. And that sort of brings us up to almost today, right? Where,
yeah,
you're saying to me today, so what do you carry in the field today? Or what did you carry and what's now what you carry in the field?
Well, right now I have two. I have Newformer for the interface between the project manager, the design team, and ownership. And then that gets transcribed to Autodesk PlanGrid, right? Which is what I have on an iPad in the field constantly.
So iPad in the field.
Yes, iPad in the field all the time. I couldn't, frankly, I know this sounds crazy, but I can't envision doing my job currently without it.
Amazing.
It's like my right hand.
Right. So for you, now it's like you're walking around with your plans. Instead of carrying, let's say, that office with all of these plans, you have it in your hand.
And what goes underappreciated, let's say you're walking the job, right? And the biggest problem is a trade would ask you a question and you'd be like, hang on, I got to go downstairs to my office, look through hundreds of sheets and try to get an answer. If I have my iPad on me, all I have to do is, hey, hang on a second, get the right drawing, look it up. Hey, here's the answer. Oh, it's not. Let me send an RFI out. It could all happen at the same time.
In that moment.
In that moment. Literally, I either give you the answer or realize that I don't have it and this has to be a request for information.
So it was a communication back and forth, which is now what you're seeing. The ability to just move it faster between whether it's a technical trade, whether it's an architect, an engineer. Now information is moving faster. But let me tell you, it's not making construction go any faster.
No, it's making it, frankly, a little bit slower.
Why is that?
I mean, it's funny. They built the Empire State Building in 18 months, right?
Yeah.
That's famous. I mean, not 100%, but yeah, operational, okay. 18 months. Any new building takes at least two and a half years, minimum. And
wait, let's just everyone to say that again, because everyone underwriting deals, every bank, everyone asking for 18 months on their debt and the rest of it, you got a guy telling you he's in the field, no less than 2.5 years, which, by the way, I completely agree with. It's like we kid ourselves.
I mean, we could get a TCO earlier, but like from literally finish to punch list, you're out 2.5 years for a major building in New York. And if you can do it faster, I mean, it depends on everything depends on your budget. But you no longer
have... Let's say we have,
an
infinite budget. And I know that's total bullshit. What are you seeing today now in the field? And we discussed it on your project. And you're like, we don't have it. That you think... If you had your druthers today, whether in the field, what would you see technology-wise? What would be your minimums?
My minimum? Well...
Well, no, your maximums. Like everything. Anything you could get. What would it be?
It would be a 3D scanner to... make especially coordination easier on site to see if it...
So first and foremost, you'd want to see every drawing
in a 3D model.
Go into a 3D model and the issue... And they call that BIM, right?
But, so here's the issue with BIM, right? So right now there's BIM, there's 3D coordination, there's Revit, right? Revit, they do all the projects in Revit, including mine. But what happens is all... the shop drawings are still then cut into 2D and approved on paper, right? Or, well, digitally, whatever, but reviewed as a 2D submittal. Everything.
And
so
that's the translation, right?
Yes.
That's the translation between the human and where tech is.
Correct. So no matter how it's designed on the design side, in the field, all the foremen carry 2D drawings of shop drawings.
So let's explain shop drawings just briefly. So you have an architectural design, and you have a structural, and you have a mechanical design. The subcontractor, basically, his homework is responsible for taking those drawings and then laying out actual sizes, whether their ductwork is different, whether the pipe is, the literal stuff onto a new drawing, basically redrawing it in the field to confirm that it will coordinate with the rest of the trades.
Correct. Because usually drawings, MEP drawings aren't fairly coordinated. So you have to coordinate, hey, this pipe literally goes at 9'10". The next pipe goes at 8'7". You have to keep in mind, hey, there's leave room for insulation, leave room for ceiling framing. Owners don't want to hear that a lot of the time, right?
Right. So that, what I think people don't realize, what's fascinating is your professionals, your architects, your engineers, your MEP are creating a theoretical document. It is not a real document. It is the trade's responsibility, which is an administrative side, to take that theory and then make it a reality on a drawing before they install
it. The best way I can tell you what a shop drawing is, right, if you have a beam that has to go 10 feet across, if you make a beam that's exactly 10 feet, it's never going to fit, right? It has to be shorter, and then you'd weld the edge, or you have bolted. You have to have room for tolerances,
right?
Shimming, whatever it is. So all of that has to get put in piece drawings or shop drawings for kitchens. How big? How do they fit? Where are the panels? Things like that. That's all based on the shop drawing process.
So a theoretical future, right, technology, and everyone can, would be to actually take, instead of nominal dimension, real dimension with everything on the original drawing.
Correct. And sometimes it still doesn't work, but that's where we come in the field to make things work. That's
so the
where,
first thing you're saying is somehow take your BIM model, your theoretical BIM that's supposed to be perfect, and then create a shop drawing, right, that should be as accurate as that original drawing.
Yes.
That would be, so, okay, what else would you love to see?
And make sure it gets installed in the same way, right? Like, it's still, people forget this, the same way we built the pyramids 4,500 years ago is the same way we built today. I know everyone's going to say, yeah, there's technology, there's cranes. Yes, that's great. But it still takes human beings to put things up. Studs, sheetrock, steel, yes, you can have mechanical equipment help you get it up, but who still welds, who still bolts, who still installs
studs?
And
they need to get their fingers in, right?
Yes, that happens all the time where on a drawing, like, how would you like me to make this fit?
So, but just to go back, so the tech would be some type of AI that incorporates all this variability that the original design includes all of that. And meaning you couldn't make a dimension that can't exist.
Correct.
What else are you seeing out there?
And with tolerances, right? So everything on a drawing is based on your slabs being perfect, your widths being perfect, and like we all know, you're dealing with concrete, you're dealing with all these imperfect compounds that you're mixing in the field. So guess what? Sometimes your slab is 3/4, you know, short, sometimes it's 3/4 out. You have to know how to mitigate this, right? And a technology doesn't incorporate that. It says everything is perfect. So sometimes when they design bathrooms, hey, I need to have my 5-foot circle, like something's got to give, right? I have to maintain my ADA clearances. So sometimes a bedroom has to shrink 1/2 inch and they don't understand why. Well, I'm like, in real life, things happen.
Okay, but let's go back to the question. What tech do you see now, right? Forget about what's perfect in the future that you're like, so we know cloud-based design, you must have it, right? We got to be able to communicate with everyone. What else is dope right now?
I haven't seen this. I've heard of layout robots.
Mm-hmm.
It would still be a little difficult because there's slab depressions for bathrooms, but it would be a great tool to double check, right? Like have that robot lay out what is theoretically supposed to be and have your carpenter go on top of that based on the access lines and see if there are any hits.
And that's also for time, right? When you're doing your layout, right, which is what you're saying, it's a carpenter going in, framing the ceiling and laying down a track to see if everything fits as per the theoretical drawing. So you're like, you know what? They can get started, but I hit this button on this robot. They're zipping around, sort of laying it out. You just would move faster in your brain, right?
And see the hits earlier.
So what about safety? What about access control? What do you think about what you're seeing there in that space?
I've seen new design. I have these access ladders that are like pre-made. I haven't personally used them yet. Like the formwork is new, right? The drop head systems, there's different formwork that's a lot easier, a lot lighter, right? Old school formwork is so heavy. New design, new drawings, aluminum.
So you're saying future tech using lighter materials for the human in the field.
Yes.
What about, I'm saying like, knowing, like, if you're a super, you're responsible for safety, and I'm not saying it's not a site safety job. You're still responsible.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
What do you think about the tech in the safety space?
I feel like it could be better in general. I mean, it's the same thing, right? For you're still anchoring into anything. You still have to do your pull test. You still have to do any... your guardrail system is usually, you know, initially, especially 2x4s, right? At your 0, 21, 42, 60, whatever it is, right? You still have to do all that manually.
Yeah, but remember back in the day, you'd go and it'd be the same hodgepodge of shit in the site safety guy's office, right? Yep. So are they now using cloud-based software for the same exact thing? So the guys... You know, OSHA 40, who's coming on? What are their credentials? Are you seeing that tech being used?
Yes. I this is one of those times where it took them a while to get it right, but DOB finally standardized OSHA 30 and SST cards, which is now what site safety managers do is they ask every worker when you come in for your SST card and it has a QR code. And a QR code you scan, right? And it looks whether the card is legit and what training that person has, whether he has scaffold training, whether he can be in the supported scaffold, things like that. So that makes tracking safety a lot better and easier now that it's standardized. So the site safety manager and myself know whether this guy is qualified to do XYZ work.
And you know who's on the field, right? No,
yes.
Remember back in the day, the trade foreman would give you who was there.
Yeah.
Right? We got five guys.
Yep.
Now you know, right? You can't lie.
Yeah,
you
got
to get in through a
systems.
Specific check-in system. We know who it is. We have a QR code, so that's helped.
That's been a giant help.
So now tell me, what would be your ideal future now? Tell me, what are the biggest problems that you think tech can handle based on what you've seen in the field? I mean, this is what you do day in and day out.
So we spoke about this on site, and funny enough, you bring it up. QAQC and punch list.
So quality assurance, quality control, and punch list, which are... regulated by the government, regulated by the architect, right? You have a few bodies that you are answering.
Correct.
To.
Like, you know, for example, especially in the bathrooms and things like that where you have ADA codes where, God forbid, you can get sued by somebody, right? You don't have a turn radius. Your toilet isn't 18 inches off the wall. You can get sued for it. And the condo board doesn't want to hear that, right? So I can do all the double checking I can. But once again, because of general conditions and tight budgets for everybody, I don't have 15 supers. I don't have 15
PMs. There's no way,
PMs.
We agree, there's no way the human is perfect.
Right.
It's not possible.
And all the software that exists now for QAQC is so input heavy, which by input heavy, what do I mean by that, right? Someone has to go, human being, literally go make a physical list to the software, right? And PlanGrid has this to a degree, so does Procore. And you can make a punch list, you can make a QAQC list, right? But it's all manual data entry, which takes hours. You would need a dedicated person just for input, and you need a dedicated person on site who what they do all day is literally do the checklist because it takes actually longer than to actually physically measure a bathroom. Oh, it's good, right? Now I got to find that sheet.
So if there was some way of automating an upload of like every drawing in the universe that it's almost like LiDAR could check.
Yes.
All of it. They're like, just let it run behind me and let it auto-populate instead of making me do another damn checklist.
And there's a middle step to that too, right? Right. That would be ideal. But what I would even like is that a QAQC thing, let's say it takes an electrical drawing and reads the outlets and literally I could go on the drawing and like verify the outlet with a tape measure and just click check, right? An auto software that does that for me. So all I have to do is go measure it, right? Verify it's correct, click yes, right? Or no. And then I could send that drawing to the foreman. Hey, you got to fix this. Right now, what I have to do is input it, measure it. Then I got to click on the icon, create the issue myself, and then say yes or no or whatever.
And then if that could get automatically distributed to the appropriate trade,
yes.
And then you find out if they're actually working on it, you're like, none of this stuff really requires you to do it.
Correct.
Right?
Or even if me or my fellow super does it, right, all I would want is that sheet to be able to clickable, right, and auto-populate. Hey, is the dimension correct? Yes. Is this correct? Yes.
You know what? I look at this, and I always have this thesis. It's like, you are the smart general in the field. You need to be at the crisis moment, not the bullshit moment, right? Like what you're saying is like, does that switch work? Is it in the right space? It's like you get paid way too much to be sitting there doing that, right? And
correct.
It's like if tech could come up with that, you'd be in that crisis moment in that ridiculous detail you put on that building with the brick arches, making sure that's correct. And you really need to focus
correct.
In
that's
that
all,
moment.
For me, I have to always look ahead. Hey, We're not reaching a schedule here. We either have to work overtime. We have to get more guys. Whatever it is, or hey, there's a design issue. This is where this is what I get paid for, right? To deal with that and to solve that as quick as possible. And every time I go in the field and have to measure everything 15 times and, hey, is this a quarter inch okay? It just takes away that much more of my time.
Agreed. And it sounds to me like we had spoken about this. And the biggest adoption issue is also age, right? Like, that's why you can't get all of this into the field, is that people are used to their ways and they want to continue it.
Yes.
So I think that there's an evolution coming. So I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions, all right? You ready?
I'm always ready.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 5, how important is technology for you right now in construction?
4.
4. What is the most outdated aspect of construction today?
Shop drawings. Just
I agree with 2D you.
Shop drawings.
People don't get it. You're literally rebuilding the job in reality, waiting for a shop drawing that still can be inaccurate, right?
Yes.
Okay. What's the number one mistake someone can make on a job site?
Importance-wise, you said it before, safety, absolutely.
Obviously.
Yeah, that's really like, that's what we see, sleep at night. I'd rather have a 2-week delay because of a design issue than some guy getting hurt. But that aside, a layout issue.
Yeah.
You make one mistake, one axis. You think it's, you know, 1'4", but it's 14 inches, right? And you take that all the way up your structural framing, and then your windows don't fit? Not good.
By the way, I want everyone to know that's coming from experience that happened to you. That is not from
that's
some
to
theory.
Everybody,
you know?
Everybody. It's 3'6". I thought it was 36 inches. Like, someone's reading the plans real quick. Happens all the time.
Or how about, just side note, how about when really expensive, you know, high-end buyers are moving your stacks, you know, at the end of the job? That can't be fun either.
Oh, no. No,
I think the universe needs to know, when you walk a job and you're a layperson and you're like, oh, we should move that, that is the worst detriment to any project. You ruin all momentum, all movement. Like, you're killing everyone.
The one thing ownership and clients don't understand is how changes, even minor changes, how they impact the trade.
Because, and they think you're like making money on it, and like, you want that, right?
No,
you would
no.
want more progress than a change
no.
order, right?
It's a change order, because change orders take time to get approved. Paperwork takes forever. 15 people have to sign the change order. They have to agree to the number. Everything is a negotiation. By the time that's done, I'm like, guys, I could have had this done 4 weeks ago.
I agree. Now, what about, what's the biggest misconception about construction in New York City?
Biggest misconception? You know, that all the trades are so expert at everything.
Yeah.
That is, I'm telling you, everybody thinks, oh, you know, there's an electrician on site, he must know electrical. It's not. It really is up to the supers and the foreman. That's the number one thing. You have good supers and you have good foremen. I would say good foreman, even above a good super. I know, bad thing to admit. But
no, I think it's interesting, because what you're saying is it's team-based, and I completely agree with you. You know what I would have said? I would have said that I think the biggest misconception is that you don't perceive how educated they are. And I think that you went to Baruch and then to NYU, and you're on site. Like, how smart the people are in the field trying to solve this. I think that people's perception was they weren't educated.
But it's funny. It's both ways, right? There's a level of like, how did we do this? How did we install this? This is so ridiculous. And then you have guys that have no schooling, but they're brilliant.
Yeah.
They can tell you every detail, like, hey, if this is 2 inches like this, this millwork can fit like that. And it's something, you know, you can't teach that.
Yeah, you
can't teach it. Some guys just have a talent for it. And
robots are coming, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't believe that. You know, one thing is, I'm telling you, no matter how much progress, it'll still take you and I to build it, matter what.
I agree. All right, so what is the most rewarding aspect of your job?
It's seeing the physical product. I say this all the time, and supers and foremen and the workers, guys, we put in long hours. Like, I don't think people appreciate it. By the time you get out of your bed, we're on site at 6:40, 6:45, on site at work. No matter the weather, it's cold, it's hot, we're there, right? And that's...
But you finish a job, right? Everyone always thinks the grass is greener, but the one thing you can't take away from you
but
is that building exists because of you.
Yes, and you're doing accounting, you're doing finance, like a lot of my families and finance and doctors and dentists. You know, at the end of the day, you don't always see the progress, right? You're sitting down on a spreadsheet, and you don't see the value. Sometimes it's hard to reconcile that. But, you know, hey, this wall wasn't here yesterday, it's here today. And there's a rewarding aspect. Hey, this came up because of me or because of the tradespeople on site. And that's so important to see, to appreciate the guys who actually do the physical work.
Well, salute to you. I really appreciate you coming on and telling people what the real deal is about construction and technology, man. You know, you're bringing it to the masses. So thanks, Gucci.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, brother.
Thanks, Eric.
Peace. In conclusion, folks, as you can see, people are looking for that tech in the field. He admitted it is getting easier, but it's not getting faster. I think that we're on the precipice of actually making construction go faster by using technology. The newest is going to be picking up variability and information by using sensors, by seeing information and data that creates business intelligence for guys like Eugene in the field. So if you're interested in learning more, and we are, and you're attacking that, you better come through, you better let us know, because we're trying to get capital into those markets, because 2023, it is the end of 2023, and we're still talking about issues from the days of the Egyptians making the pyramids. We are here to make that change. We're going to bring the people on looking for that change, and the people who are supposed to be implementing that are here as well. Real Tech Talk, player.